Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. Ricky on the board. S&P futures up 4. NASDAQ futures up 29. Dow futures down 18. Just remember that, Ricky. No one really knows anything. As it just said. Our guy just said.
Understood. Yeah. Is that not you, Chief?
What? No, that was not me.
I could have sworn it was you, man.
Might have been Carl. Who the hell knows? Is Carl with us?
Hey, now.
Could have been Carl. That guy.
You know, I tell you, it was the night before Christmas and all through the house. Not a creature was stirring. Except a bunch of assholes coming towards the door in 2x2 formation.
Yeah.
I'll be watching that tonight because that is the Christmas movie. It is not Christmas until Hans Gruber falls out of Nakatomi Plaza.
Oh, God.
Well, now I got a machine gun. Ho, ho, ho.
you do know what today is a anniversary of, the one that I remember fondly. I'm looking here at the top 20 weather events in Chicago.
Yep.
Bitter cold Christmas, 1983. Up until a couple of years ago, we had that one night when it got really cold, but up until a couple of years ago, that was the coldest night in Chicago, and I remember my stepfather, who was we used to go out for dinner on Christmas Eve, right? Back before any restaurants were really open, it was only like one or two.
Right.
And so we decided we're going, and get a load of that. Well, here's a bitter cold Christmas from December 22nd to 25th, 1983. The temperature plunged below zero for 100 consecutive hours, a record. It was the coldest Christmas ever in Chicago. December 24th had a low of minus 25 and a high of minus 11. An average of minus 18, making it the coldest day in Chicago history. And we decided to go out to dinner.
Well,
this is before you had automobiles. Everybody who's young, I guess, closure.
Had a choke.
This is before you had carburetors, no right. Electronic ignition. And to say they were trickier, I mean, if you knew what you were doing, they were okay. But there was the automatic choke, and then there was, which means you had to press your the pedal to the ground once, pull it up, and that set the choke. If you did it again, you kicked the choke off, and then you couldn't go anywhere.
So you
had to do it just right. Or people used to have the choke on the dashboard where you pulled it out, yeah. And actually, I never had one of those.
I did. I had one of those, but one of mine, actually the only one that I personally owned, was one that I converted because the automatic one was, the way those worked was off a thermal, basically a coil that was set up so that when the engine
It was exactly
started,
a coil, yeah.
Yeah, so when the engine started, it got hotter, and that's what opened it up.
And it slightly released the choke.
Yeah, and the problem with those is that they were very finicky, and then they were also prone to fail. And obviously, if it failed, you were not going anywhere. So so I had a knob on the dash, and it's drill a hole in the firewall, run the cable to it.
Well, what you could do, if the thing didn't work properly, you could take the air cleaner off.
Yeah.
Get a stick and manually hold the thing closed until it started, but you're liable to get a little bit of flame out of there because you don't want to use your hand.
Well, it might backfire, which could be very, very bad. By the way, speaking of backfire, I don't know if you saw the video that's up on the various social media sites. It's on X. Some guy apparently, well, now everybody says he didn't turn blowers on in his boat. I think what he really did was he stuck a gas nozzle down a rod holder, which I've seen done before when I used to have a boat at a marina. And anyway, he turned the key and some assembly required.
Oh, God. Well, the interesting part was my stepfather was kind of an odd duck. He was mostly good, but he was... He had his moments. He decides, well, we should go in two cars. Because my nephew was very young. He's like, you know, maybe 6 months old. In case one of them conks out, we'll be sure to get the baby home. And I said, okay, which, if one conks out, which one am I? Who gets stuck with the other one? Well, you do, of course.
You do, right. Of course, that's your problem.
That's
right.
Your problem. But we made it. And we found a place open somehow. And they were making pizzas, whatever the hell they were doing. But,
you know, there's a funny thing about that, which is that there's, so my old place that I used to live down in Northwest Florida, Christmas Eve, of course, you know, most people consider to be a family thing. And so essentially everybody nowadays shuts down because you don't get any business anyway, right? So, I mean, you know, why? Right? People close at 6 or, you know, whatever. The liquor store is usually open until about 6 because, you know, just in case, right? You got to make sure you have your booze. But there was one bar and restaurant called Folkers that stayed open. They were open Christmas Eve. And if you just didn't really care for the holidays, you were, you know, your in-laws showed up and, by God, I got to get out of the house or I'm going to kill them. you know, whatever the excuse was, they were open every year. And there were a couple of years that I trundled my way over there and had myself a couple of beers and something to eat.
Well, I was mentioning to Ricky on the way in that there was always places, and I remember people going to Midnight Mass and going out to breakfast afterward. There were 24/7 right. Places on the south side. But, I mean, the whole nugget of it is, you know, which a lot of people don't understand. I mean, now you get this idea of you got this massive house, everybody's got their own spot, you got two kids, one right. Kid gets the whole basement, and you never see him, you don't know what he's doing on his machine.
There was none of that.
There was none of that. I mean, there was all kinds of people living in a small space. So no matter what, even though our family always, we were fine, we always kind of got along and did our stuff, we went to dinner, we did a bunch of stuff. Well, at 9 or 10 o'clock, the bars probably reopened at 8, you know, and they were crowded. I mean, everybody just said, hell with my family at midnight. I mean, you weren't going to be home still opening presents for the two-year-olds at midnight if you're 25, right? I mean, you know, you weren't going to do that. So everybody went out. Or all the breakfast joints were jammed at 1:30 in the morning because they were open. They were probably their biggest night after midnight mass.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, you got out and sort of did stuff. But this is pretty interesting as we talk about global warming. I just kind of went through this. You know, whenever you look at something, you always find something on the page, right? We're talking about the in 1952, there were 4 consecutive hot summers that peaked in 55 and still were hotter than any summer than the one year in 88 or whatever. I mean, there was a lot of weird weather back before we had any of this talk of what we were doing and everything.
Well, this is one of the things that, you know, that makes all of this yelling and screaming that people are doing stupid, okay, is that prior to the satellite era, which, of course, you know, now we have, right? Prior to the satellite era, there were huge swaths of this planet that had no accurate records at all. All right, simply because there was nobody there to measure it.
Right.
All right, so, I mean, it's not that, you know, we were pigs or we lost them or whatever. It's just there was no human being there. Or if there was, they didn't care enough to put up a thermometer, right?
Right.
So, you know, and keep a book. So there is a very substantial part of the planet that until we had satellites overhead, weather satellites that, you know, take measurements on an all-time basis, that there just is no accurate record. But the other thing that's interesting is that the record, there were several sets of record high temperatures. There were, you know, during the Dust Bowl years, it was called that for a reason, right? I mean, not only was it stupid hot, it didn't rain. And there were several records during that period of time that were set that remain unbroken to this day. And this of course, was not caused by you, Chief, getting in your SUV.
Funny you should mention it. I'm sitting here reading the thing right here. This is, now this might be a little wordy, so I'll cut it off. But a series of hot, dry summers occurred in the early and mid-1930s.
Yep.
June of 1933 was the hottest June on record for Chicago. The summer of 1936 was the third driest on record, with only 5.5 inches of rain falling in June, July, and August. Wow. In the official Chicago record books, the summers of 34 and 36 had above normal temperatures, but didn't appear to be extremely hot. But these were lakefront temperatures. Inland records from Rockford, Midway, and Aurora tell a different story. 25 of Rockford's daily record maximum temperatures for the months of May, June, and July, and August were set in 1934. Wow. And are still were still standing as of 2000. And May 31st was 104 at Midway, the earliest 100-degree temperature ever recorded in any Chicago area location. Chicago's official's all-time high temperature is 105. The University of Chicago was set on July 24th, 1934. It was 109 at Midway, the highest temperature ever recorded in Chicago location. But Midway was not the official observatory for Chicago in 1934. That's unbelievable. What exactly?
Well, here's
what caused the Dust Bowl? Was it a sun thing? What was that?
Well, there's a number of things that happen. So there are several cycles of different duration that are normal. Okay, and they happen all the time. I mean, we know about the ENSO and the North American Oscillator and this is a La Nina El Nino thing, right? That we hear about during hurricane season, because they have a substantial influence on the formation of tropical cyclones and where they go, which is even more important. I mean, there were a huge number of hurricanes that formed before the satellite era that nobody ever knew existed, because they never hit land. And unless you were the unlucky poor bastard that happened to run into one on accident in a ship, because we didn't have a radar either, right?
Yeah, a lot of them just turn up the middle of the Atlantic and...
Or in the Pacific, same deal, right?
Right.
I mean, they come off Mexico and form in the Pacific, but unless they hit Hawaii or, one of the other islands, or again, you're the poor bastard in a ship that happens to go through one, prior to the satellite era, we didn't even know they were there. So, now, of course, every single one of them we have, we know they're there immediately because they're very visible on a satellite. But there are natural oscillations that occur. Same thing happens, with these record colds and these really nasty cold snaps that we get in the wintertime. Those are primarily a result of the jet stream and how that deviates. And in the wintertime, the jet stream tends to come further south. It forms kind of like a U shape and moves across across the United States. And of course, same thing happens over in Europe and Russia, Siberia, and everything. But those pulses are where that comes from, because that's the Arctic air that gets driven down into the lower 48. But this is these are natural cycles, and some of it is driven by terrestrial stuff, and then you have sunspot cycles that are responsible for this too. And contrary to popular belief, a dark body that happens to be hot emits more heat than a light-colored one. So the more sunspots you have, the more solar radiation actually reaches the Earth. And it's not a huge difference in terms of percentage, which is a really good thing, because otherwise we'd either freeze or bake.
Yeah.
We'd literally all die, right? But very small differences make for huge changes in the Earth's weather, because of the ridiculous amount of energy that huge flaming orange ball emits.
Well, to a certain extent, Your weather makes your own weather, which sounds stupid, but it really isn't. If it's really hot and dry, any storm, unless it's a big one, trying to get here, just dissipates. Or if it's wet all the time and the air is humid, it doesn't take much for more rain.
Right. And that's the that's the thing. I mean, there was there's so many people that were screaming about the hurricane. Helene that came up into western North Carolina and East Tennessee and, caused all this damage. And, I tell people, you folks were doing bong hits when you were supposed to be in history class. Okay, all this has never happened before. This is all human caused and, da da da. Excuse me, 1916 and 1940, twice in reasonably recent history. Yes, it has happened before, okay, and exactly the same way. You had a tropical system that got driven into the mountains, and it happened to coalesce with a cold front that was coming across from the west to the east, which is the direction our weather typically comes from in the United States. And those two things combined, and that plus the lift of the mountains, because as air gets driven up higher, it cools, produced extraordinarily stupendous amounts of rainfall, which, of course, is what, you know, there's your flood.
Well, that's why you get a massive amount of snow on the west side of the Continental Divide, not on the other side.
Well, that's right, and that's the thing, is that, you know, people seem to think, you know, oh, well, you know, all this stuff just started in, you know, 1973, or, no, it didn't. And the other thing that's interesting is that now all of Europe, because of their craze over so-called green energy, their industry is strangling because their electrical costs are three times what they are on average here in the United States. And if you want to see an example of that right here in the U.S., you just look at California, where they've mandated these energy forms be used. I pay 11 cents a kilowatt hour. How'd you like to pay 40? Because you can if you go out there.
And well, you mentioned one of that even in a city like Chicago, which has lost so much industry. Now, of course, you've picked up, you know, everybody's got an air conditioner, but you've lost so much industry that if all of a sudden, say the governor was bringing this one thing in, what if the guy catches fire out his behind, and in the next 2 years the guy brings, like, I don't think it's not going to happen, it's fictional, but brings in, like, you know, 40 other industries. Where the hell are they going to get the power?
Well, this is, this is one of the big things that's happened with all this, you know, this AI nonsense, is that these things are utterly insane power consumers, okay, the electrical requirements. And the other thing that's kind of interesting along the same lines is that, I don't know if you've caught this, but, you know, because NVIDIA is one of the darlings that's driving the market rally. They have now announced that early next year, I think they're talking about like April or May, they're going to have the successor to Broadway. You know, they're supposedly new chip, which really isn't a successor at all. It's just a third chip on the same carrier, the same, you know, on the same board, if you will. Now, the interesting thing is that there are plenty of people who have been running around frothing at the mouth that NVIDIA has figured out how to violate Moore's Law. And no, they have not. What they have done is managed to come up with a hype machine that is driving their stock, which works great right up until it doesn't. And then they're going to be trading at $20 a share.
Carl, I think if there's too much money in the system, there's always going to be a hype. It doesn't matter if it's Elixir. There's always going to be a hype.
Oh, absolutely. But here's the other thing. You know, 10 years ago, I've been yelling about this for a long time. This entire concept of everything going into the cloud is one of the most stupid on the planet. And the reason is that nobody works for free. Okay? So now if you have bursty loads, you know, this show, you know, one day there's 10 million people that want to listen. And the next day there's 200,000. Okay, well,
you got an extra zero in there, but yeah.
Well, but I'm saying if you build a data center to handle 10 million streaming listeners at once, but the normal load is 200,000, right? You're paying for an awful lot of capacity you're not using.
Well, I think a lot of listeners, because you don't get it, you just haven't heard, but even a building. I lived in an apartment building for a while, and I'm going to say 25 stories. It wasn't like 80 or anything like that. But the day they turned the air conditioner on, they had to notify Commonwealth Edison. Once it was on, it was fine. But turning it on, you got a big sucking sound.
Yeah. Well, you know, there you go. When I had my company there, you know, we had a demand meter. Okay, now most people in their homes have absolutely no idea what the devil that is. You have a base energy charge, and then you have a demand charge. And the demand charge comes from two things. One is reactive power, which if you're running arc furnaces and stuff like that, you're going to get billed for that because it's delivered power, but it doesn't do you any good, really. Okay, but the power company has to be able to deliver it. And as a result, otherwise the grid collapses.
Right, that's what I was talking about. You pay for your top hour, not your normal hour.
Correct. And so we had the same situation. Now, you know, if you're a manufacturing company, one of the ways that you avoid this problem or mitigate it to a large extent is you run a third shift, right? Because it's in the middle of the night. that doesn't work when you're an internet firm and people would like their service to work 24 hours a day.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, especially in the middle of the summertime when you're paying for the air conditioner and, you know, never mind that in a high-rise there's really no such thing as, you know, not needing the air conditioner, right? Because that's just kind of how it works. You can't open the windows. But I, you know, we used to get a demand bill. It was, you know, one of the things that pissed me off fiercely. But I understood why it was there because, you know, ComEd had to be able to deliver the power when I wanted it. And not when they wanted to give it to me, but when everybody came home in the afternoon and it was 95 degrees out in Chicago and they all wanted to turn on their AC units. Well, guess what? My AC unit had to run too. And, you know, so we were a contributor to that, and we got billed for it. We had to pay for it.
Carl, we're going to dash off the breaker. I'm not positive we have Joel today or not, so I usually hang around. S&P Futures up 6, NASDAQ Futures up 42. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
Lone Wolf Bank, Stocks and Jocks. I'm tomorrow, Ricky on the board. SP Futures up 550. NASDAQ Futures up 40. Dow Futures down 9. Not much going on there. Let's see what we have doing anything. We have Sherwin-Williams. I cannot understand for the life of me how the hell we booted Intel. We don't like Intel. I understand why we boot them out, but how can you compare Intel to Sherwin-Williams paint? But evidently we are. So NVIDIA and Sherwin-Williams are the two new places in the Dow. I don't know if people knew that or not, but now you do. Over in Europe, we have the DAX down 35.2%, FTSE up 46.6%. We've got the CAC around up 35.5%. I think people know we close at noon today, and we are closed tomorrow. So, you know, that's what we do at Christmas. Asia, Nikkei down 124.3%. Hang Seng up 215, that's a full 1%. When Shanghai up 42, a full 1%. Yesterday we were positive. The Dow was up 66, S&P up 43, NASDAQ up 192. The same stocks, Meta, Tesla, same stuff every day. I guess it means they're worth that much. 10-year, we're up to 4.61, so we're continuing to creep there a little bit, up one basis point. The Bund unchanged 232, Japan unchanged 1.07. We've got oil. Up 45 cents, but under 70, 69. There you go. Staying within $3 of 70, you know, for quite a while. Gold, up $2, 26.30. It's kind of steady here. Silver down 4 cents, 30.14. We've got the foreign exchange. Bonds still down almost, I mean, the euro is almost under 104, so the dollar remains strong. British pound unchanged at 125. We have crypto. Bitcoin up 1,100, 94,094, still high, but not 101 like it was a couple, 103 like it was last week. Ricky, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports, can't be too much traffic today.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 6:33 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. 35 degrees right now with a high of 39. Areas of fog this morning with a sprinkle. Tonight will be mostly cloudy with a low of 34 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 49 degrees right now with a high of 76. Warm with plenty of sunshine. Tonight will be partly cloudy with a low of 49 degrees. Let's talk about traffic, man. And you were right, Chief. There's barely any traffic today. Inbound Kennedy from Monroe's, we're looking at 8 minutes. We're looking at 21 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 13 minutes. 12 minutes inbound Dan Ryan from 95th. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 15 minutes. Let's talk about sports. Yesterday, the Bulls lose to the Bucks, 112 to 91. And on Christmas Day, we got Nuggets at Suns at 9:30 p.m. NHL yesterday, Blackhawks lose to Minnesota Wild, 3-4. And the NFL yesterday, Packers demolished the Saints 34-0. On Christmas Day, we got a couple of games. Chiefs at Steelers, 12 p.m., and Ravens at Texans at 3:30 p.m. Back over to you, Chief.
Do we have Joel or we still have Carl?
We got Carl.
How happy you think the New Orleans dudes were playing in Green Bay last night, Carl?
Well, I don't know. You know, I mean, That's a little bit different environmental-wise, right?
They sort of mailed it in. They didn't play very well.
Well, you know, the same sort of thing happened to the Vols in Ohio. But there's less of an excuse there because, you know, everybody says, oh, you know, Ohio is so much colder than... No, it ain't.
No.
Oh, here comes Joel.
We got Joel?
Hey.
What's up, buddy?
I'm early.
You're early.
Yeah, now it just ticked 7:35. How are we doing today?
We're doing all right. Carl was going to cover, but now Carl will recede a little bit.
Carl can stay.
Carl, why don't you stay?
Carl can stay. He can throw some questions at me. Carl doesn't have to leave.
Well, let's talk. What do you guys think of the amount of games? I know I've been ragging on this for a few days. The amount of games they're making these college kids play. The Georgia quarterback had surgery yesterday in his arm. So he's out. The guy in Notre Dame's out.
Who's out from Notre Dame?
The defensive guy, the All-American defensive tackle. He's out. You know, what do you think these guys lose per game in these big games? They lose like two people a game. So five postseason games, you're down 10 people on average probably, right?
Well, and then half of them go into the portal.
Yeah, well, a couple of them are already in the portal. Well, the Penn State second-string quarterback's in the portal, right? So is SMU.
I'm waiting for Nico to show up in the portal, which is, you know, our quarterback. So,
well, you gotta get in there and make some dough. Joel, I don't think you're one of these that says that the money and what's going on now is the same as it always has been.
No, it's huge. How many games did they had?
Oh, I know it's.
Oh, I mean it's Chief, we've been talking about this for a long time. Do you think? Do they care about the players? Do they care? The only one thing that they care about, and that's money. And they're just, how many more games? I mean, the 12-team playoff, and then, you know, they got an extra couple weeks. It's professional. It's not college. This is professional.
You could play.
The transfer portal, there's no difference.
You guys do remember when the Bulls were the end of it, right?
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. Okay.
Of course.
Well, when I was a senior in high school, it was the first time Notre Dame went to a bowl since, like, they played Army in the Rose Bowl or somebody in the 20s. They decided they weren't going to do bowls. And all of a sudden, one year they did, and then they've been – but it was, I think, the season ended Thanksgiving Saturday. That was the last game. So you played, whatever, 9 or 10 games. And then they neither didn't do anything – or you had one more game January 1st, and that was it.
Right.
Now, you have the – I'm sure you guys – Joel probably knows it off the top of his head, but if you're the loser in a conference tournament, conference playoff, and then you go into the thing anyway, like Penn State, you could play five postseason games against serious competition. I don't see any college having the roster to be able to do that.
Well, you know, the last time that the bowl games decided the national championship, you ever heard this story?
Well,
is why to this day, I despise Philip Fulmer and the Tennessee Volunteers. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, Carl probably does, but I don't.
Do you know, Carl? I don't know. I mean, you really got to have a good memory here.
No, not on that one, because I mean...
Okay, 1997, okay? Michigan and Charles Woodson win the Rose Bowl, beat Washington State. They were ranked number one the whole time, okay?
Okay.
Tennessee plays Nebraska after in the Orange Bowl and absolutely rolls over like little pigs, Peyton Manning, and they lose, okay?
Well, I remember that. Yep. Peyton Manning lost his last game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what happens is, and then Tom Osborne was retiring and everything, and everyone's like, oh, you know, Tom, we got to get him a national championship and everything. And so what Fulmer did is he voted Michigan third in the coaches' poll. And and that allowed Nebraska to win the coaches' poll and split the national championship. And you know what also happened that year? They should have lost the game. They were playing Missouri. There was a pass in the end zone. The Nebraska receiver kicked the ball. Do you remember that?
I don't remember.
You guys remember that?
I don't remember that. I remember Peyton Manning was getting. He didn't want to play the second half. They were clobbered so bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so we ended up, and that was, and then they went to the, you know, they went to the, you know, they went to the BCS after that. That was 97,
gotcha.
And then the 98 Rose Bowl, and then, you know, and then they changed the format, and then, of course, you know, they changed the format again, and, right. Well, they've changed it a couple times, but, of course, you know, before they went to the 12-team playoff, we all know the mighty Michigan Wolverines won the national championship last year, but... You know, it's just all about the money.
Well, for a long period of time, when you look at people's records, I'm not exactly sure on this, but I'm pretty close to it. There were always two polls. There was the AP poll and the coaches poll, right? And one of them did not include the bowl games. So there's a lot of teams, Alabama being one of them, matter of fact, probably the worst offender, that has more shared national championships than anybody else. They only won one or the other. Matter of fact, I think in 73, when the Irish beat them in the Sugar Bowl, I was there. I think in one of the polls that didn't include the bowls, they still had a number one year. Because I think they were still co-number ones in 1973. And the interesting part was, who the hell was president? Was it Tricky Dick? I think it was. The Irish were number three. Alabama was number one. And Ohio State, which was undefeated, was number two. So they went and they won the Rose Bowl. And Tricky Dick declared the winner of the Sugar Bowl as the national championship. So the Irish won, which made them 12-0, not 17-0. And so did Ohio State. So Ohio State basically got jabbed. They were ahead of the Irish, and they won too.
How about in 1973, Michigan was 10-0-1, and they didn't go to a bowl game?
Well,
they didn't go to a bowl game. And the reason for that, they tied Ohio State. It was a 10-10 tie. And so the vote of who was going to the Rose Bowl went to the athletic directors. And Bert Smith, the athletic director at Michigan State, cast a deciding vote, 6-4. Ohio State ended up going to the Rose Bowl. And Michigan went to no bowl game. They probably would have lost it. They lost all their bowl games under Bo. But, going back. But, anyways, a lot of sports talk here. A lot of sports on tomorrow. You know what I'm going to do tomorrow?
What?
I'm going to go see a Bob Dylan movie.
Really? Yeah. You don't happen to know. We couldn't find him yesterday. You didn't happen to see how the college stacked up against the pros rating-wise on Saturday, did you?
Well, you think it would be extremely poor because all those games were horrible.
Plus,
but I think I heard they were okay.
Well, I don't know if you knew this, Carl, but I'm sitting there. Actually, I was having lunch with a couple of clients, and we're sitting in a pizza place, and I got there early. I said, hey, put the game on. I said, it's got to be on ESPN. Evidently, ESPN has a part of their contract with the pros for getting Monday Night Football is they can't do any college games when a pro game is on. So on Saturday, they had to kick the first two games to TNT.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. And I'm sitting there, well, how the hell did TNT get involved in this stuff? Well, that's how they got involved.
Well, there's all sorts of, you know, it's just, I don't know. This last weekend was just one of those things that's like, you know, you sit there. I'll tell you, Tennessee, we probably have one of the most rabid and loyal fan bases in college ball, if not the most so. I mean, considering that as a club, we haven't really earned it. Okay? I mean, we do, but we haven't. All right? I mean, we're maybe a top 10 team, but we're not in the, you know, we're not a top 5, right? But you know, you watch these guys, and this has happened a couple of times during the season. You let the other guy's defensive line into your pocket half a second after the snap. Of course, you're not going to score much if that happens.
Take a look at the Bears, for instance.
Well, I'm just saying. You know, I mean, your quarterback has a small problem when that's the case, right? But then, as if that's not bad enough. We let the other guy's side have 15 seconds where a defensive line does not penetrate into their pocket. And as a result, they throw 40-yard bombs and complete them.
Well, it seems, I take a very, and Joel always thinks I'm nuts with this, but I take a very economic look at how these teams operate when you start getting more and more games. And the for a while, Alabama was pretty much unbeatable because Saban could stack 85 people on scholarship, and he had about another 10 down the road at the junior college doing something.
Do
so he had the whole thing stacked. And a lot of, like your Stanfords of the world, sometimes they would only have 60 people on scholarship by the end of the summer.
Right.
They didn't have anywhere near the depth. Now, the teams that were like that were Alabama, Ohio State's always somehow managed to do it. Georgia has been for a while, and Clemson for a while. The Irish were always just a little outside of that because they never, if somebody didn't pan out as a scholarship guy, they never booted them out. And Michigan was kind of the same way as that. The Irish are starting to sneak up and do that. You know, where they the Alabama's dropped out. Clemson has dropped out. Hey, Ricky, would you mind going downstairs and get my brother? Evidently, he can't get in the front door.
Come right up.
All right.
Hey, Chief. Chief, yep. I got a hop here. I just want to say I'll be back. You going to be doing a show next Tuesday?
Yep.
Okay. Hey, Carl. Nice being on with you.
You bet.
Go Blue. Everyone, have a great holiday, a safe holiday. We'll talk to you guys next week.
We'll do. And I don't know if Kenny's in. You can see him, Carl. I can't. If Kenny's in, we'll.
Yeah, he is.
He is.
I'm here.
Carl, I will talk to you on Friday, bud.
You sure will.
And
right, take care.
You have a good Christmas, buddy.
You too. Merry Christmas.
Kenny, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing all right. We have front door issues here, which is weird, but we have one of those key card things to get in. Well, it's not working the last few days, so getting in the front door is a challenge.
Must be the cold weather. Is it cold there?
Not that cold. it just isn't working. So we have we got some issues doing that. But so how are you? What do you make of the market going to the end of the year? And what do you think?
I'm not super surprised, right? I think that there's still a lot of confusion, some chaos after the election, but then certainly after what JJ said last week in terms of how he positioned himself in the Fed going into 2025, which was clearly different than what the algorithms wanted to hear, and so they threw a temper tantrum, right? Which actually it was okay because it needed the pullback, so it was going to happen one way or the other, whether it happened in 6 hours or whether it happened in 6 days, it should pull back, and I still think it's actually going to pull back. Friday's reaction to the PC number, which was slightly better, so weaker than the CPI and the PPI were, and slightly weaker than the expectation, caused the market to all of a sudden, oh, everything's great, no inflation, we don't have to worry about it. JJ's going to cut, five times next year and all that stuff. Not happening. In fact, you and I have had this conversation. I'm still concerned that inflation is going to rear its ugly head and JJ's going to do a reverse. Right, he's going to end up having to raise rates in 2025, which I think the market will be very surprised at.
I just wonder,
Chief, you there?
Yep, we're
hello,
Ricky. What are we doing?
Chief.
Okay, I can hear you, Kenny.
I can hear you both.
And Ricky, Kenny, can you hear me now? I'm like the guy in the.
I can hear you now. Yeah.
All right, Ricky had to run a quick errand, so he's back. It's supposed to show you what happens when he's not here.
Wait, so did you hear anything I said or you didn't hear anything?
Yes, I heard everything you said. You didn't hear me, which is probably all right. I get this vision, Kenny, that I sure as hell hope it's nothing but a bad dream and it doesn't turn into a nightmare for everybody.
Right.
We're going downhill just like we did in the 20s.
Yeah, 100%.
Every morning, or not every morning, every day like this week, I'm hearing a piece of information that, excuse my French, absolutely sucks. The other day it was, 37% of all small businesses are behind on their rent?
I don't know. I didn't hear that.
Something was 36. I'm sitting there with 36%. What are you talking about? So, and today it was.
I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised because it's been out there, right? I mean, as much as Barack Obama and Joe Biden kept telling us how great it was and the economy is so strong and everyone's doing great, the fact is that it's not. Small businesses are suffering.
Well, today we're up to 3.74 mortgages 3% mortgages are not getting paid on time. And the credit card...
3.7% mortgages.
Yeah. And so and now the credit card number keeps running up. I mean, I don't know if it's a Powell thing, but, you know, on a personal level, I almost, you know, I'm the world's most nonviolent man, but I almost want to grab him upside the ears and say, why do you keep telling people you're lowering rates when everybody in this country, except the people you hang out with, they're going up, up, up every day?
Right, right. And they're choking. And the fact that they lowered rates by 25 basis points does nothing for your credit card debt, does nothing for your job, does nothing for your, you know, your mortgage debt, although your mortgage debt is fixed, I get. But to your point, people are not paying a 3.7% mortgage because they're having trouble somewhere else, right?
Yeah.
That's
No, I'm saying 3.7% of mortgages are in arrears.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right. And so is that because people are making a choice? They're putting food on the table or they're trying to pay the mortgage? I mean, right? They got to make a choice, I guess, if that's the reason. Otherwise, people are just losing their jobs, which doesn't really sound right, because that's not happening at the moment, right? It's only 4.2% and the job market remains strong. So I think it's just the fact that people are struggling.
Okay, what are you the two? And you know, I don't know how I would. You know, usually I bandy this about with Carl. He's kind of our job guy, but you know some of his stuff too. What do you make of this? Is the one that really? I don't know enough about how they do the surveys now that people don't really have home phones. But the household survey versus the establishment survey, because. Yeah. You know, the one is on TV, and Carl always looks at the other one, and he looks at the one that's in more detail and stuff than I do. But to look at just the A1A, you know, which is the employment summary page of a household survey, the establishment survey has, and I've said this a few times, unfortunately, last year, if you take the last 12 months, where do you think we are? We've averaged at least 150,000 jobs a month, right? Maybe more than that.
Yeah.
Let's call it 150. Well, where does that put you? That's a... 1.2 million plus another whatever. It's 1.8 million. 1.8 million jobs.
Yeah, 1.8 million.
That's on the establishment survey. And the household survey over the last year, we're down 700,000.
You're going in and out on me, Chief. I can't hear the third word you're saying.
It probably has to be. I don't know where. Must be on your end. Anyway, but is that better?
Well, I hear you now, but then suddenly you go out on me. But
okay.
Go ahead.
The household survey has 700,000 less than last year.
Right.
Now, versus 2 million plus. Now, the only way that both of those surveys can be remotely accurate is if we have 3.5 million people working two jobs, which may be true. Now, is that positive or not? The household survey... We have 700,000 people. We have our amount of people that are working, paying the freight for all the other people, has dropped below 60%. In order for us to be healthy, I mean, why do we think these budget deficits are at this stage? If 64 to 65, 63 maybe percent of the people in the labor force actually have a job, I think we can almost get a balanced budget. At 58... We don't have a chance. We don't have a chance. And you can work, you can deliver pizzas at night, but that's not cutting it.
No, it's not cutting it at all.
I don't even know what to believe here. I mean, it just seems like there's this, for the bottom 80% of the people, there's this constant degradation. And yet with the market going up for the top, you know, well, a lot of people, even blue-collar people, have 401k plans. So it's not like nobody, it's not like 29 when only 7% of the people own stock. I think it's got to be way higher than that. Now, what do you think it is?
I think it's higher than that.
But is it 50, 40? I have no idea. What do you think it is? How many people own stock?
I'd got to say it's got to be at least 50%, but it's probably higher than that even.
There's a lot of people that don't have 401ks. There's a lot of people. There's whole neighborhoods, I think, that don't have 401ks.
Well, if they don't have 401ks, do they have anything? Do they have an IRA or a Roth?
I doubt it.
Well, then maybe you're right. Maybe the number, maybe it hovers around 50%. Maybe it's a little bit low.
Ricky, do that. Why don't you just do a quick Google? Say what percentage of the population owns stock?
1 second.
Yeah, we'll dig in there. Because I bet it comes out in the mid-30s, okay? But it's still way better than 7, than the 20s. It's way better. But I mean, I just don't...
Or what percentage of the population is it invested in stocks, right? Because you could own, you know...
So it's about 61%.
Target funds, or they own an ETF like the SP ETF, so they have a fund, right?
Ricky says 61%. Well, that's way higher than we thought. That's good. That's better.
Right. Okay.
There's a 2023 Gallup poll. Yeah, it says roughly 61%.
All right, so that's encouraging.
Yeah, it's real encouraging, actually.
Yeah, it's better than 7% and certainly better than 30%, right?
I think at the end of the day, Kenny, you and I, we're always going to be blue-collar guys, I mean, no matter what, even if we hang out in the New York Stock Exchange like you did. There's nothing wrong with, I mean, my grandfather told me once, anybody can break his back for a dime. It's the guy who makes his money work for him is the smart guy. I mean, I get that part. And, I try to do that for my clients, but that's why they give me stuff. That's why people give you stuff. But the idea that people are wildly rich, maybe second, third generation, that never actually earned it. I don't know if I have an issue with that. It just doesn't feel right. Especially with these, the tax part where nobody pays capital gains if the old man croaks, that kind of thing. Something seems weird, doesn't it? And all the wealth is in, if crypto bombed and the market dropped 40%, we would lose dramatic wealth. It's not like anybody that could buy a house for $500,000 is buying it because they made $2,000 a week and put $500 away for 10 years. I mean, it's not what people are doing. It's just totally different than you're in my formative years, we put it that way.
Right.
I don't know if it's good or bad. It just seems weird, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, it does seem weird. It's a whole different world out there. I mean, look at the way some of these young kids are making money, and I still don't understand how they're making money on views on TikTok or views on Instagram. They're just making it into a fist, which I don't really get, because I'm not sure who's paying them, right?
Yeah, I don't know who's paying them.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. But one way or the other, you're right. If all that blows up, then it's going to be a different place. And people are going to have to go, what the hell happened? But until then, it's just functioning, it's just moving along, and the economy's fine, or at least they tell us it's fine. And for the most part, it's okay. Although I tell you, I'm starting to get a little bit nervous when you quote things like, 3.7% mortgages now in arrears, which means what about the people that got the mortgages, 5, 6, and 7% in the last year?
Yeah.
Right? What's going to happen there? Because if at 3.7%, if you're having trouble paying your mortgage, what's going to happen if you have a 6 or 7% mortgage and you run into trouble?
Yeah, well, Nancy, I've heard Nancy yesterday. She and Audrey did an open house, and people came in. There's a house for sale, and I guess it's really nice. I mean, totally walk in. I mean, it's not a mansion or anything, but I didn't see it. But it's evidently the guy who lived in the place. Everything's up to date, right? So, which people want, because the last thing you want to do is put every dime on a mortgage and then have to replace the roof the next week. I mean, you can't afford it. So they said, we've been waiting for this house to go on the market for literally 5 years. It finally did. But our mortgage is 2.8, and this one's, it'll be like 6.8. Just can't do it. If they were trading dollars, they'd be happy as a clam to hop in there. But they can't.
Right. Because mortgages have done nothing but go up ever since Jay started cutting rates. Right. Yeah. I mean, mortgages are kissing, like you said, at 6.7%, I think.
Well, the credit card rates are I don't know if I sent you that
which
thing.
Which is the opposite to what he... To what.
Yeah. Well, the weird part, the thing that's...
he told us it was going to happen.
Bizarre in there, Kenny, is the spread. I got this thing. I should have sent it to you. From 2000, they not only quote the credit card rate, but the rate over prime, which I guess you would say is the bank's edge, right? That we're up to like 14% over prime. So the spread continues to get bigger and bigger, not just the rate itself. Nancy was saying it. One of those, those things where they say no interest for your first year.
Yeah,
I had no idea that the interest rate on that is actually like 35%. And if you don't pay on day 366,
it goes back to the beginning.
Yeah,
if you don't pay in that year.
Yeah, you get. So if you bought something for $100, now you own $135.
Right. If you don't pay, if you buy something on that 1 year annual, so say you buy a refrigerator for $2,000, whatever. It's 1 year interest free, but you have to pay the interest. So say at the end of the year you still owe $400 on the refrigerator. They go back, if I understand it correctly, and charge you interest on the whole $2,000 starting from the year ago. I don't think they just charge you interest on the $400. I think because you didn't pay it off, they charge you interest on the whole $2,000.
Yeah, that's what she was saying.
Yeah.
So it's $700.
Yeah.
That's a number.
Yeah. That's, right. Right. What? And they keep charging it, right? Every month until you pay it off, clearly. But it, you know, that's a whole nother gimmick, right? Because people get drawn in, oh, interest free for a year, oh, interest free, and then they don't pay it off in a year, and then suddenly they get whacked. Suddenly they get the bill and it's up, not down. And they go, what the hell happened? Well, you got hit with this interest charge because you didn't pay it off in a year.
We had before COVID, when the people from the Federal Reserve actually used to come to work. By the way, a lot of what Trump wants to do, I'm kind of right on, Kenny. If he makes all the federal people come back to work, I'd be happy with that.
Keith.
I'd be okay with that. The only thing, though, is I think somebody who's been home for 3 years, for them to come back to work, you almost got to give them a 20% raise at the price of the cars and the parking. Everything has gone up since. But I said the one guy, he was on the show one time. I said, you know, why they keep lowering these rates, yet nobody gets their credit card rate lowered. And he says, well, do you have any idea how much these people write off? The guy's name was John. I go, John, let me ask you. If somebody, I'll use the term Kenny, if Kenny buys something and all of a sudden he has a, you know, emergency room deal or something, and he can't pay it off and he's paying this and he's missing a payment, and it's 3 years into it, and all of a sudden Kenny goes destitute and he writes it off. I said, how much of the write-off is actually what Kenny bought on day one, the sofa or whatever it was, and how much of it is all the charges and all the BS they put on top of it?
Exactly. How much is it all the interest charges?
Yeah. And he goes, well, you got me there, because the write-offs are actually a lot bigger than the original purchase.
Right. Exactly. Because of the interest charges.
And well, the lawyer charges, if you're the late fee charges and all that other kind of crap. But if you don't pay your lawyer or your mortgage in like 2 months, don't they start dropping legal fees on top of you too?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not in that position, so.
I think if you call them and tell them you got a problem, you're probably okay. But if you don't, I think after a couple of months, you can't just catch up. There's other stuff you owe in their mind.
Yeah.
Where are you doing Christmas? You told me you're back in Florida.
We're in Florida.
Well, it's hard to keep track.
I think it's going to be a little bit cloudy, but right now the sun is out, the sky's blue. We're hanging out. My parents are up. My brother's here. My kids are here. So. We'll have a nice time. You know, it's the Feast of the Seven Fishes tonight. It's Christmas Eve in an Italian household.
I'm going to go back to you said, though, you cheat. If you cook them different, you can have the same fish twice.
Yeah. No, it's not that you have the same fish twice, but you can take the same fish and cook it, you know, not have it the same night, right? But you'd have it every year. You can switch it up every year. So you can make stuffed calamaris 1 year, but then the next year maybe you make fried calamaris, right? So you use the same fish. It's just a different recipe, but you wouldn't do it. You wouldn't have two dishes of calamari because that's the same. That's the same.
All right. I thought you said you could. You could cheat, but
no. You got to have seven different fishes.
So shrimp only once. You can only do one way.
So well, shrimp one way tonight, but next year, like you know, this year I'm going to just do shrimp in. It's a garlic shrimp, but next year I might do a shrimp scampi. The year after that, I might do.
I'm going to get the recipe for the garlic shrimp. That sounds good.
Yeah,
so, you
yeah,
know, but, Kenny, it is hard to pin you down. San Francisco, New York, Boston, Florida. I mean, it's...
I'm between Florida and New York, really. That's where I am.
Do you like the new private jet better than the old one?
Yeah. You're such an ass.
Well, this ass is going to wish you a Merry Christmas because it's been a great year, and let's hope we have another trip around the sun healthy next year, eh?
Yeah, Merry Christmas to you as well.
Well, we'll talk to you next week. New Year's Eve, you'll be around?
Yep.
All right, buddy. S&P futures up 6. NASDAQ's up 41. Very quick break. Come back. Dan Janinas is on today, and Hal Snar is on Thursday. So we're kind of switching up this week. We'll be back with Mr. Dan Janinas. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains. Think about some rebalancing, address some growing concentration issues, maybe thinking about commodities.
We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at time@ptisecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here.
Hear ye, hear ye. The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air.
Bah, humbug.
Christmas is a bother. The noise, the crowds. I really wish it were outlawed.
How can they talk about Santa Claus when there's so much unhappiness in the world?
Poor misguided folks. They missed the whole point. Lots of...
That was a miscue. You can go ahead, man.
Oh, God.
Sorry about that.
Dan, you with us?
Yes.
I'm just reading here on the bottom tape. Rumors in the mist, murmurs in the mist, whispers in the wind. Dan Janitas, star of Stocks and Jocks and maven of all fixed income, now leading a group to buy 15 different pro college football teams.
Does it list any of the teams?
You're starting out with Georgia. Only the good ones.
Oh, okay. So in that case, then, yeah.
Something about he has a purse of $15 billion and he's dying to spend it, something like that.
Hey, we're talking about diversification, and there we go.
Yeah, you got to buy Boise State and Georgia, you know, just to be diversified in case one wins.
Okay.
What do you make of that? What would possess you with some money to even look at something like that? I mean, somebody bought a chunk of a pro team a couple of weeks ago, didn't they? I think it's
exactly just that. It's you know, it's a diversifier and a portfolio. It's a I don't know, one of those things that you can say you did, even if you're not a specific fan of the team that you're purchasing, or the teams that you're purchasing. I think it's something that we all want to say that we've done or we've had a part in or want the experience of having done it. I know a lot of friends over the years who've wanted to purchase gyms, and I even had my hand in it for a while and thought, oh, this would be great, until I watched the way it unfolded for my friends, and it really wasn't quite what they had anticipated. So I think it's something that sounds good. I mean, certainly you have to have the money to do it. The politics that are involved, I think, would take me off that, the interest list there, that would be enough to keep me from having any interest. But I think watching the whole dynamic through my friend's eyes who decided to invest might be kind of cool.
Well, it's sort of like people always wanting to buy a bar. I've never had any interest whatsoever, right, in buying a bar. Never.
At least with the bar, though, for the most part, you're going to get a good return. I mean, unless it's in a really not so great area, or you know, there's some, you know, a new bar up opened across the street or whatever. Bars are good cash cows, you know, and if you get good people working there, you can run a really successful business. And I would put a bar at, you know, I would put a bar ahead of either of those other businesses.
But it's real hard work. It's real hard work.
It is hard work. And it's 24/7.
Yeah. What I'm trying to lure you into here, not lure you, because you're too smart to be lured, is every time you do something, the first thing, when I mentioned the buying college football team, everybody always has, and you're the guy who says it more on the show than anybody else. I mean, you walk in and the one group you went to was I remember this, Dan, the guys who did the infrastructure work in Florida.
Right.
And they were going to be the beneficiaries of, you know, maybe the whatever, the bill, the one bill, whatever they named it.
Inflation Reduction Act.
Well, yeah, the one where they're going to have, you know, well, build more roads, the infrastructure bill. It was a different one, right? It wasn't an infrastructure one? Or was it the same one? Whatever. But, you know, without even saying it, in your mind, and it's not like I'm in your mind, you're getting a view of what you think the world is going to look like for the next 10 or 20 years for that company. And you're going to say, okay, it looks like this is business is going to be there, this job is going to be for this, and if you do this road, you got to do this bridge. You're somehow concocting mentally, and you could probably put it on paper as quick if I asked you to. You say, this is what I believe these guys, they're doing this much now. They're only going to do a little bit better. They're going to do better really kind of incrementally because this road's going to be four lane. It's two. The business that these guys are trying to deal with is going to at least grow at 3-4%. So their numbers they're giving me make sense. Looks like they're going to be able to pay off this bond easily, not just, you know, struggling to do it every month. You have to put together a view of not only the world itself, but the world for that company going forward, right? I mean that's what you start with, even though you don't even know you're doing it. You've been doing it for so long, right? You're not going to walk in and say, the guy's telling me he can pay this bond back. It looks to me like there's not going to be a road put in here for 20 years. Where the hell is this guy coming from? I mean, in your mind, that you're already doing that, right?
Yeah.
No, what I'm getting to is when these guys are looking at some of these sports teams, I don't want to drag you down this hole, but when you pay a number, the number that they paid for the pro football team, they have about like 10% or something, puts the number of the team at like $8 billion worth of work. And I'm sitting there going, okay, well, even at an implied interest of 7%, which would be pretty hard to get, I think, at that level, you're talking $560 a year just for debt service. And I think these teams make, at best, $225, which is like kind of a lot for a family, but it's like a third or a quarter of the debt service. What is their view of the world, Dan, that I'm not seeing?
I think it's the, you said the, just having said you've done it or having said you've had that experience, I'm not sure that they're going into this thinking that this is going to be a great investment. I never would think that, like I mentioned, the other example would be buying a gym or buying a business. There's certain businesses you don't buy for the business themselves. And if you're buying a business where there's real estate involved, or in the case of a pro sports team, there may be real estate involved, but more importantly, there may be a certain level of salary that has already been promised to a certain number of players that, you know, that you're locked into. It's you don't have a whole lot of flexibility, I think, is one of the first things I'm saying. And it can hurt you on the downside probably more than it can hurt you on the upside. You could have some good news that gives you a pop, but I don't think you do it for the money. I think you do it for the pure interest in the venture, in the sport, in the hobby, just to say you can do it.
The trading floor, the term we used to use was psychic income.
Yeah.
But and Kenny, we just went through, I was mentioning to him how some of the numbers that have been come out in the last week that you hear on the radio, we actually have a pretty good news radio here in Chicago, and they do a lot of business stuff, and where they get these numbers, they're talking about like 3.75% of mortgages now are in arrears. Last week they came out with a number at 36% of small businesses aren't paying their rent on time. How do you get from there to say, God, football tickets 5 years from now, instead of being $200, they're going to be $500? I mean, it's like people are looking at two different worlds, aren't they?
Right, yeah, it's two totally different worlds. I'm wondering how far those numbers carry over nationally, for example, also, whether those are on the high side. The numbers you're quoting me there in Chicago would be on the high side.
These are national numbers.
National numbers.
The mortgages and stuff, okay.
Yeah. Then it's, you are talking about apples and oranges when you start looking at inflation 5 years from now based on a, basket of goods and services as opposed to a specific business.
What's the story on the, and we'll get off this and get more on what's going to happen in the market next year. What's going on with in Florida? How many people are behind on more? I know people that can't even get in their places where they used to live. What are they doing? They can't still be paying a mortgage, are they?
Yeah, this has really been a pretty rough situation here in throughout the state, but South Florida, Southwest, Southeast Florida, Palm Beach, Broward, and Dade counties in particular, where the buildings were being forced to by the code that was part of the aftermath of the building collapsing in Sunny Isles near Miami last year, that every building be brought up to code by January 1st of 2025. Well, they're scrambling right now. Every high-rise building is just filled with contractors trying to replace balconies, just do all the necessary work, replace elevators. And what's happened is that this level of increase in code has been so, it's just an abundance of money that's had to be put into this in a short period of time.
Dan, where'd you get all the contractors? Where'd they all come from?
Yeah, exactly, and the infrastructure to do it, which is crazy, and the employees to do it, and the staff to do it, because these guys are out there in the rainy weather and the hot weather, but the whole point is that it has already knocked out a lot of people. So people who are living on fixed incomes suddenly getting a $40,000 or $50,000 a year assessment, you know, and on top of that, you're going to be paying more for things like insurance, your homeowners certainly. Other items that are involved in your HOA, other costs that are part of your HOA as well. And then, of course, the other issues that the rest of the country are dealing with, like inflated car insurance and other food and other things as well. So, yes, I think it's particularly hit here hard. You have seen a mass exodus. You've seen a lot of people moving back back to the Northeast, back to places where they had families. I can't say there's less traffic, because it always seems like there's more traffic at season right around this time, especially it seems like everybody's here, and everybody may be here, but they may not be staying here as long this year. They may be looking at this year as their opportunity to sell. A lot of realtors here are saying that this is an opportunity to sell. A couple of clients of mine who have places in the Northeast and places here are actually been increasing their number of holdings, their number of transactions, I should say, in real estate in South Florida, because they see the upside. They see the fact that once these prior owners or current owners have paid off this this large assessment, it's going to make it more appealing for the new owner to come in and step in at a lower price. So that is a trend that is happening to a certain degree nationally, but it's happening in a very large way here in Florida. It's creating opportunity in the housing market. It's shifting the dynamics. So not only do we have a new governmental administration shifting the dynamics here, we have a new demographic based on who can afford what and who is willing to put up with certain charges. Now, if you're able to get in after the assessments have been paid by a prior owner and you're in your 30s and you're working remotely, it might be a good deal, and it might be a good deal to watch those prices of the properties they're buying
I'm not the expert on this, but it sounds like you know more than me. I'll ask the question. When I might ask you this before, when Robin lady used to be on the show, she had a condo up in Belmont and Belmont and Sheridan. A block down was a place called the Briar. Absolutely gorgeous building. If you went by it, it was a big building. You know, it went from apartment to the condo, and they spent all this money putting it back together. Well, they didn't do a very good job, right? So there was stuff left to get done. And the thing was constantly giving people a special assessment. Looks like we need a new roof. All of a sudden, they pull the roof off, and they find out that the bricks for the top 10 feet, water's been getting in there, and a tuck point ain't so good. Whatever. But it got to the point where if somebody sold a place, they had to pony up like $35,000 in an escrow account just in case something happened. Do people still do that, where you can't escape without?
Yeah,
does that still happen?
Yeah,
How does it work?
It varies building by building. In some cases, they require the seller to make the full purchase. If they've already determined a number for the assessment for that particular unit, whether or not that number goes up, but if they've already determined a particular number that each unit is going to be responsible for in a given year, then the new buyer, if you will be responsible for that. From there, it's more difficult to tell whether, okay, we found something further when we dug a little deeper. But in this case, they're going to have done as much of, if not all of, the digging to come up with that number before they charge the unit holders.
What happens in the time period? One of my my sister-in-law, she has a friend that they were an 11-story condo. I told you the story about how it was, you know, there was the beach, more stuff, the road, parking lot, their place, you know, like a lot of places in Florida, right? And well, of course, they were right in not the one last year, but the one 2 years ago. They were pretty much dead center. So the water comes up, and the idiots left cars in the parking lot. So the cars are five stories up, banging into the building and stuff, right? So anyway, they it's been 2 years. They still don't know if they're going to. You can't live there. They don't know if they're going to tear it down or whether they're going to try and fix it. They've had no determination of the insurance company. Now, does she owe her mortgage for those 2 years, even though there's no money from the insurance company?
Technically, she does, but I don't know how they officiate that. I'm not sure if that how the, you know, I think what's happened is they're not necessarily giving them a break, the owners a break, but I think there are delays that they've been getting. As to how long, I'm not sure, but I do know people who have expenses from real estate related, stuff that should be covered by insurance that hasn't been covered, and that's getting in the way of them paying their mortgage. And they've been given this grace period, if you will, but I don't know how long that grace period is. And what I do know is it varies from place to place.
Yeah, I mean, it seems weird. All right, on to the economy and what we should be doing for people and why people should be doing stuff with us. I was talking to one client and a potential client the other day, and they were asking me what kind of accounts I've been getting. And I said, you know, I've been getting a lot of concentration issues. I mean, it's something, you know, the last four or five accounts I've gotten, you know, and they're good accounts, good people, but God damn, there's all kinds of people with all their money in one stock. And there's not many people that'll take that on. I mean, that's you're not going to go to Merrill Lynch and have somebody do that. I mean, it's very specialized. I mean, I'd say there's probably four or five people I would count on to do that for me, and I'm one of them, type of thing. But, I mean, that's tricky business. I mean, people have $1 million in one stock. They work there, and they never diversified. There's still a lot of companies where the entire retirement plan is the company stock.
If it's in a taxable plan, you know, if it's outside of an IRA or outside of a 401k, then it brings up another issue in terms of how you lighten up, because your basis is going to be high. I mean, your basis is going to be low, so yeah. Your tax consequence is going to be high, which kind of leads me to another question, related question, is how to handle tax loss selling this year. I think clients, yeah. I mean, this week in particular, it's a time that clients are looking at their portfolios and saying, well, you know, we've made money in everything, and, you know, we've made money in all the stocks, we've made money in the bonds, and we've made all this interest, and how are we going to temper some of this upside here? And we were smart that we used municipal bonds as one of the few ways of being able to shelter some taxable income at both the state level and the federal level. Also looking at T-bills or you know, any kind of treasury bonds, notes that will shelter the note holder from the person who owns the T-bills from the interest income on a state level. So there are ways that you've been able to do it without having to do specific tax loss selling. But in terms of tax loss selling, it's really tough to find candidates when everything's gone up.
Income's not bad, dude.
income's not bad, right?
I always thought that the day I write $1 million check to Uncle Sam is I'm going to take you guys all out for a drink because it means I had one hell of a year.
Yeah, I agree.
Man, but not
this
people
is a good
think
year.
That
this is a good year to have that problem.
Yeah, it's a good. I mean, I don't have a problem with it. But the thing you don't want, and people go, hey, this guy doesn't like markets going up so fast. Actually, I do like markets going up so fast for my clients and so forth and myself. What I don't want is markets to go run up and then run back down. Because when that happens, it's been my experience, Dan, I've been here a long time, more money's lost on the way down than it's made on the way up.
Because oh, absolutely.
It's not even close. And one of the things, and I'll ask you, you know, you're a political guy, why is it when I started in the business and the Dow was 800, you could deduct $3,000 of capital losses against your income every year, and now the Dow is, instead of being 800, is what, 46,000, the number is the same. How is it that people bitch back and forth, right and left, Democrats, Republicans, they'll come to fistfights over both sides? Why has neither side once even mentioned raising that number?
Yeah. Agreed.
I mean, how could that number not be 100 grand now?
It has to be.
But it isn't. It's three.
Right. Yeah. But I agree with you. The thing about economics is it is a natural, everything does work out in the end if you look at it properly, the relationships between any economic variable and how they impact each other, and a certain increase in rates having a certain effect on a currency and so forth, that works the way it should, things should all be fine. But when there are all these stopgaps that are added to the picture or the equation, or there are these new there are other ways of adding money into the system, or other ways of controlling the system, if you will, that's where we get in trouble.
Well, yeah, I think that it's necessarily true. I just we don't have a lot of people in our clients. Like I said, there's not a lot of losses.
Right.
There are, you know, some you could conceivably of if you're in a covered writing program this year, you could have losses on your calls you wrote, or clearly you've got losses on the puts you bought for protection. You might have started out the year with a stack of $100 and you're buying the 98 puts and now the stack's $200. But so you don't mind losing a few bucks on the puts,
right? If
you're up 100 on the stack, or well, some people mind, you know. I guess some people want everything. But it's the tax part is can be pretty finicky. And I mean, the thing you don't want is have somebody who's like never been in the market before, you know, getting hair up their behind because they hear somebody on TV and putting, you know, 200 grand in NVIDIA, and all of a sudden the stock's down $50 or something, and now you're down 100 grand, and I'm not going to say it's going to happen, but and now you've got 3,000 for the next 33 years. You better live a long time. You know, that's not good.
Because it right, and that's why we have diversification. And, you know, even, Chief, talking about diversification, that the sectors that have been left behind this year, you know, could pose opportunity for 2025, or, you know, in some cases, I think some of the sectors that have been left behind have been left behind for a reason. For example, REITs, only up 10%. But looking at names like energy that are up 7%, I think we got to see a better year for energy next year. I think the international market as a whole, MSCI, IFA up about 7.5%. You got to see a better year as a whole. I think the Europe tends to follow the U.S. Europe and Canada tend to follow the U.S. So I think we're going to see some continued improvement in those economies overseas into 2025. So I would say expand your positions there a little bit. I've been pushing high grade bonds, high yield bonds, as long as you're on the short end. Anything on treasuries, as long as you're on the short end. Municipals, as long as you're on the short end. Question mark would be small caps. Large caps have been up 22% this year to date. Small caps have only been up about 11%, about half as much. And this is really where the question comes in, because there are some really good names in small cap space that could be good additions to a portfolio. Here is one where you may want to buy a small cap ETF Or if you do have a few small cap names you like, you might just want to buy those in a very small position. But be careful, because there, when liquidity dries up, that's the first place it's going to start. I mean, it's going to dry up in any area that is high beta. And also, if you're looking to accumulate larger positions, it's going to be difficult if you have a, you're trying to spread this name across a number of clients, positions, or accounts. It's more difficult to do that with small cap names. So there will be that liquidity risk with small cap names, but it doesn't mean that there is an opportunity there. And it doesn't mean that after a year where they had a decent year, they couldn't have a much better year in 2025.
Well, Danny, it's funny. Either great minds think alike, or you and I just happen to be hitting on cylinders here today. But that conversation you just mentioned is can be very difficult. Because you don't know. With retail people, really with anybody, the hardest thing to do is to pick one that was a clunker the year before, because you like to keep the winners and you like to dump the losers, right? I mean, that's instinctive. Yet it almost is counter what you should be doing. This is a real-life example. I started work for one of these subcontractors we do our protected program for. So they essentially give pieces of portfolio to me to manage the protective stuff, which isn't to say I think I could do better than the other stuff, but this is the niche that we have, Dan, even though we can do the other stuff as well, right? It was 2019, so not that long ago, and people put their, we did some in the Qs, some in the S&P, and some in the Russell maybe, but everybody was pretty hot wanting to be in the XLE, which is the oil piece of the S&P 500. So 2020 was an absolutely horse bleep year for the XLE. It did nothing but go straight down. So when we had this discussion starting in 2021, nobody wants to say, this thing's a piece of crap, let's get out of this oil, it's never going anywhere. Well, in 2021, the thing like doubled in a half, right? So now it got down in 2019, the XLE, I'm looking at, say, 25. Well, then it got to like 100, and now it's down to 84, and it's dead in the water. It's actually down a buck this year. So if you would have said, Jesus, chief guy talked me into it, which I didn't talk you into. I mean, I gave you the opportunity. We're 20% in this oil crap, and it's crap. It's down on the air. Look at this other stuff. Look how much it cost. Well, now does that mean we don't want any XLE this year, or is it going to be like 2021 where it's going to be the big winner? These are hard discussions to have, Dan.
Right. I mean, yes, agreed.
And I don't know, if somebody asked me, what do you think oil next year? Boy, Dan, I don't know. It's been between $68 and $72 a barrel for the last, 6 months? It's going nowhere, it appears. Now, all of a sudden, it could be 95. I mean, if all of a sudden crazy stuff happens next year. It doesn't look like it, because actually the world, except for the Houthis, the world seems to be getting a little less crazy than it was a month ago. It's still kind of crazy, but I don't know. Same thing with the bank stocks. People say, how much should I be in the XLF? And you go, they were real hot for a while. Now they're not. I won't say it was a lot easier when he only had one ETF, the SPY. Let's put it that way.
Right.
Do you have a sector here? Do you like or don't like?
I would say if there's a sector that makes sense, I mean, like we've been saying, bonds all along. We've liked bonds. We've liked corporate bonds. We've done very well in short-term corporate bonds, but we're buying individual names. One of the things that has that has really played to our advantage is that a number of these shorter-term bonds have been called, which is a pop-up in the price of the bond. You're getting the price appreciation early, and you're also getting the fat coupon when the bond is called. So that trend, I think, is expected to continue as interest rates come down. But that's not an ETF trade. That is a buy the individual bond trade, and that's what we do. That's what our specialty is. If you have to pick a sector of the market, I would still say, although they've run quite a bit, the larger names probably have better upside than the smaller names in here. If you just want exposure to the market, the SPY, the VTI, I think those give you broad exposure to the market without having as much of that trade-off risk, as you were talking about, like where you have a set, you know, a price that just dropped, and now you have to decide whether you want to double or let, you know, that position slide. You know, the individuals name, individuals who come with a portfolio to us that have a name that they like. All along, I've been saying this year, trim, trim, trim. You really need to be trimming. You really need to be lightening up in those areas. This is not, it is absolutely not the time to be growing in those sectors. This is a hard year to fall in love with a particular sector or a particular name, and a good time to have had broad exposure to the broad markets that have the best value, that pay, have the best cash flow dynamics, and not necessarily looking for the, you know, for the needle in the haystack name.
Well, for a lot of people, Dan, people I've dealt with, NVIDIA and Apple are not a stock, they're a religion.
Yeah, at this point, absolutely.
It doesn't matter what you, there was, the other day Apple was, you know, it's at pretty much an all-time high, all-time here, isn't it? I mean, it's pretty close. And the guy was saying the other, don't ever, ever underestimate Apple or ever sell it. You know, okay, well, fine, ever's a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a long time.
You know, you wouldn't have told anybody to do that. I mean, I'm gonna kick this thing up here. I'll bet it is at an all-time high. These are when you start doing this stuff for the whole next year, Dan. These conversations are not that easy, and especially if somebody has a huge chunk of a stock that they have either from a family or from something. I'm gonna say, hey, it's got to be an all-time high. It's 255. Let me get the max line here. We'll go max. I'm not Mr. Chartman here, but the stock was, hell, the stock was 2013. It was 30, right? Make that 12. You know, when it didn't break over 20 until 2012. Now it's 255, and it does up straight up. So I mean, yeah, I don't. It's kind of hard to. They at least pay somewhat of a dividend. So, but these stocks that pay zero dividend, you have to take your profit yourself, right, Dan? I mean, if your Tesla runs up, they're not going to send you money ever. It doesn't appear. So you have to take your income yourself. And it's not, you're not, you know, getting bad vibes to Elon Musk. You're not, you know, you're not acting like a bad shareholder for selling some. That they're making you do that by not sending you any money, right?
That's what's happening, right?
Yeah. I mean, when you go in with a bond, they're going to send you a check, right? So that's where your reward's coming from. Well, with these stocks, if they're not going to send you any piece of the profit, it's up to you to take a piece of the profit.
Absolutely, yeah, and that's why I've been a proponent of selling on rallies and not necessarily buying on dips. But you know, I think there's been, if you've noticed, the day the market was down last week and then we had a little bit of a sell-off yesterday, there's a hesitation in the market as to whether, you know, this is going to be the beginning of a larger sell-off or not. And I think when we get to that point, the market is asking the question, the investors in the market are asking the question, have we hit that point yet, and is there any particular news out there that concerns me? And then it keeps coming back to the same place. No, there's no major concerns. There are big concerns like the federal deficit that are concerns. There are issues with credit card debt and bigger picture issues. But when you're talking about issues that affect the day-to-day trader, they don't have a whole lot of reasons to keep selling. So they may look at the sell-off as a buying opportunity. I'm telling them to do the opposite. I'm telling them to look at the rally as a selling opportunity. So
that's a tough conversation, man. You know,
but it would give them a better sense of rebalancing with interest. Another point, you know, that's been noticeable over the past week, the little hikes in interest rates here and the 20-year up to like 4.67, 4.68, 10-year hitting, touching 4.50, 30-year like touching 4.80 almost. We're you know, kind of entering new levels in longer-term bonds. And again, over and over again, I'm saying stay away from them as investments, because as those yields continue to rise, the price of those long-term bonds goes down. So even though the yield itself might look attractive, you're going to lose a big part of your potential return in the capital depreciation as that bond approaches maturity. So that is something that's important to point out, because these higher rates do impact the rest of the world. The 10-year going up into the 450 range has an impact on mortgage rates, has an impact on cost of capital. That these are not so much slowly, but they're moving up without a whole lot of discussion. And I think this is an area that we have to be concerned about in the short run.
Why do you think there is no discussion? I mean, stuff that how come the stuff that we talk about on the show is the stuff that nobody talks about on TV?
People don't want to talk about the stuff that's not good. They don't want to, you know, they just want to hear better, better, better. And they also, I think, more importantly, people want to believe that they have figured out how to make money in this market. And it's not true. I mean, it's true that they've made money, but it's not true that they figured out how to do it. You know, it's...
What's one of the things that makes me nervous, and by the way, Dan, that's our job, is to be nervous for people to give us money, right? That's what they're paying us to do.
Right.
So they can go ahead and do brain surgery on somebody and have to worry about their stuff because we're worrying about it. That's right. What we do. But one of the things that is clearly worrying me right now, let's take Apple, and I'm sure as hell not going to tell anybody to sell Apple, but right now I've got their P.E. ratio at 42, say, 41.9 as of today. That's historically very high for Apple. Okay, I mean, there's been times when it's been higher than that, back in God knows when, but in 2005 or 4 or something, when they, you know, had issues. But I mean, I'm going to say, if you look at this chart going way back, the average number is probably maybe 21, maybe not even that high, right? Let's be nice and say it's 25, all right, and or even 30. Let's be even nicer. Let's say it's 30. Well, you know, you might say, gee, you know, this Apple is at 42. It's average PE's 30. I mean, where's the growth going to come from? How are they going to grow into that PE? But the math, Dan, is weird. If you go from 42 to 30, stock's going to go from 250 to, like, what, 190? That's a big number. If you bring, you know, Microsoft back to historical PEs, now maybe the next year or two, the market is absolutely correct. They're going to grow into this number and kick ass. And I'm going to sit there and go, hey, Chief, you should have known they were going to double profits next year. Okay, fine. But if they don't, I mean, if Microsoft went back to normal PE, well, where is it trading? 250? I mean, we're talking, you know, $100 or $200. Right. We're not even close. I mean, that's sort of what has me worried. I mean, people say, well, we could have a 2% correction. What do you mean, 2? We have a correction. We could be down 40 or 30. I mean, that's how much we've been up, right?
Yep.
I'm not predicting that. I sure as hell am not hoping for it. But I mean, you know what I'm saying.
We're working with those numbers. Those are the numbers we're working with now.
Yeah, those are the numbers we're working with.
Yeah.
I don't. What do you see in the debt of those guys? You never mention, you know, somebody buying a 20-year note in Apple or something. I mean, I'm sure they. Do you do any of that stuff? I mean, or do you just
it's a very good question, because there have been a few of the large cap tech names that have come to market over time. The deals have not done well. Because the mentality is generally not, it doesn't lend itself to, financing acquisition through the debt markets, or financing growth through the debt markets. So it generally doesn't work out well, and the situations where it has happened, it's generally not very popular. It is very much punished by the Wall Street analysts. So if there are 10 tech names, tech or mega tech names out there, and there's only one that has a decent size outside corporate bond that's been issued, that one is going to get the most ridicule, and they're, you know, and as far as I'm concerned, unjustly so, because the amount of debt could still be so insignificant that it's not going to have any impact on them the company having the ability to pay their bills during difficult times, or even the thought of default risk happening. But it has just been a stigma in that industry that you don't grow with debt.
Okay, so if they do, it's when they go and borrow, then they do what? They go to the market, right?
Short
the
term,
yeah.
Through the banks, revolving credit, you know, term loans, bank, you know, well, short term bank.
Didn't somebody go out? Was it Caterpillar or something? They went out for a 50-year bond when the stuff was real low or something. Was it 50? There was talk of 100-year, but they didn't somebody go 50?
There was a talk. I don't know if that issue is still outstanding, but I know there was talk of a 50-year bond. I would sort of put Caterpillar in a different category than the tech names. I would put them in a different category because they'd be viewed differently anyways. So there are names that have used long-term industrial names that have used corporate debt still and are still continuing to use corporate debt as a way to finance their balance sheet, and usually generally is through acquisitions. That's the main reason that they're going to do these financings. So yeah, they've extended it for a long, you know, for these extensive periods. As a bondholder, if you believe that you're at the top, you know, of the cycle, rate cycle, then that might look attractive. But for the most part, those don't look attractive because quite a few things could happen between now and the time that bond matures. Most likely, there's going to be a call on it, much shorter call date, and that's going to take away some of your duration. You know, the duration that you're looking for, if you were looking to do some duration matching that I know a lot of insurance companies look to do. And it's, you know, if you think there's any chance rates are going up, you're going to get whipsawed because those long-term bonds that you just purchased are going to go up higher than your comparable short-term bonds.
Dan, what do you make of stuff like the political risk and the stuff you and I do? When I say the political risk is, we've had, most of my the guys my brother deals with more than me, some of his clients, and a lot of them are maybe a little older or something, just happens it lands that way. A lot of them really, really like this XLV, which is the healthcare piece of the S&P. And yeah, it's been a pretty steady performer. Now, recently, it's, you know, got its ass kicked a little bit because of the RFK rumors, and then,
right,
you know, what's going to happen with, you know, all of a sudden there's not going to be any vaccines, or we're trying to do something with the prescription drug industry. I mean, these guys have been, I seriously doubt anybody's going to have the ability or the balls to do that. I mean, I kind of hope they would, but I don't know that anybody will. I think the industry is way too strong, especially, and you got a president that's only going to be there for 4 years. I mean, but I'm saying that something like that is a political risk that's taken, you know, this stuff, taking these guys down from, I'm going to go to the max, I'll go to the 1 year here. They were, in September, it was 157, you know, having a pretty nice year. And all of a sudden, it's 138. So that was what, now, you know, we had puts and we had everybody protected. So, but still, it's not the same as going up, right? Now, the question is this an area you want to, you know, don't go there, or you think 138's a buying opportunity because it's down almost where it was in May? You know, is that, I mean, these are things that you have to factor. That's really hard to do. I mean, it's really hard to do. I mean, you talk about not you, but this one's going to come out of left field. We have a massive budget deficit. We have a guy coming into office that's so far spouting about lowering taxes. The minute he takes a look at the numbers, I don't even think he's going to say, boy, we got to lower taxes. I don't see how that's going to happen. It might. They might continue what, you know, the ones that are going to come back in 85 or 2006, 26. But I don't see how anybody looks at these numbers and knows how to handle a calculator to see the tax. What are they going to go after, Dan? There's going to been rumors forever, God, since I was in college, that long-term interest, which really is a long-term financing mechanism, much like stock, should not be considered tax deductible because dividends aren't.
Right.
What does that do? I give that a 1 in 1,000 chance. What if somebody pulls that one up, you know, from out of their behind and says, we're going to do this? What does that do to the bond market?
I think that is a 1 in a gazillion chance of that happening.
Yeah.
But But if something like that, that's a good question. If something like that was to happen, it would be similar to thinking about what happened when we were, you know, when we were given the tax benefit for say IRAs or retirement accounts. I think it would encourage investment is what it would do. It would encourage growth. It would encourage investment. So those would be the positives that I would hope that would be behind that move, behind that decision to eliminate any or at least lower the tax consequences on those interest on those bonds.
The theory behind this, and I don't know what the cutoff would be, Dan, but the theory is that if Dan and I are in the plumbing business, and all of a sudden we get some huge job, and there's no progress payments coming from whoever it is, the government or someplace, and the first thing we do is head over to Lakeside Bank and get ourselves a $2 million loan because we got to go out and buy all the pipe and all the stuff for the city of Chicago, wherever it is, and that's the way the contract's written. I don't think there's anybody would think otherwise that is a cost of doing that particular job and should be able to be written off, right? Right, Dan? I don't think anybody...
I agree, yeah.
But now, if Dan and I decide, okay, we've got $50 million worth of debt in our company, and we make, net debt, of stock, and we make, on average, 15% a year, because we really know what we're doing. Nobody can handle a wrench like this Dan guy. We do a real nice job. And all of a sudden, you know, somebody like me might say, or Dan probably ahead of me, is going to say, you know, if the next $20 million, if we're going to continue to make 15% a year, if we can go out and borrow long term because we got a great credit rating, if we can borrow stuff at 7.5, guess what? We're a big winner on this, right? We're making 15, we're only paying 7.5, so the shareholders actually make more. Now, to a certain extent, the best thing in the world is leverage. Obviously, if it gets too big, the worst thing is leverage. Now, if we go out now, but for us, this is not borrowing for a specific job to buy, you know, pipes and faucets and stuff. This is now, we are now going to manage our company in such a way that we're going to use this instead of equity financing, instead of stock. Now, a stock, you can't, there's no deduction for that, but this there is. But it really is the same thing as stock, right, Dan? But one's deductible and one's not, correct?
Right.
So somebody somewhere... You know, all the stuff I'm saying is, you know, these are like us winning the lottery. But all I know, Dan, is that the shape the government's in, one of these "this will never happen" deals is going to pop up somewhere, and I don't know which one.
I hear you. Yeah, I agree, and I agree. I think it's going to get a lot of pushback that would prohibit it from actually being able to pass through, but. There could be. I mean, it does make a lot of sense, though, right? I think it makes sense. I think it makes sense at some level. If we're not talking 100%, we're talking about a certain percentage of the interest income being given back to, if you will, or being sheltered from the company. So that it makes an awful lot of sense.
Well, the mistake I'm making when I talk, I don't seem to be able to communicate these days. But what I'm saying is, Dan, is it somewhere, because this just happened in the city of Chicago, by the way, that's why it's current in my brain, they wouldn't let this guy come through with a property tax, and they've done crap like, it used to be 7 cents for you to buy a plastic bag in the city, right, which is a revenue thing, and they claim it was, you know, to keep plastic out of the system, and now the retailer used to get 2 cents. Well, now they raise it to 10 cents, and they cut the retailer back to 1 cent. So if all of a sudden you got 584 people in Washington dreaming up ways to increase revenue, you don't know what the hell's safe. I mean, you might walk out and find every time you put your garbage in the garbage can, you're going to have to put a quarter in a meter or something. But you don't have any. So right now, somebody somewhere is dreaming up all kinds of stuff, and we don't know
where
it's going.
We're almost there, yeah.
And you are 100% correct. People will fight like dogs to not have long term interest deductible. And you and I can name 5 other things that maybe somebody's dreaming up, and we're going to say nobody's going to allow that to happen. All I'm saying is 1 or 2 of these is going to happen because they're broke.
Because they have to at some point.
Yeah, and you and I are hoping that whatever they do doesn't affect what we do for our people. We don't want a transaction tax. We don't want those kinds of things because I don't think they have any idea of value, and so it would screw things up. But something is going to happen, I think.
You know, one thing I can guarantee you, Chief, is that the first few months of the new administration is going to see a lot of this discussion. And I think we're going to have some new thoughts, new ideas, new ways of tempering some of the debt situation come to fruition. So I think there will be some of this discussion, and I actually think it's a good thing to have this discussion. How it gets played out is a different story, but just to have the discussion, I think, allows us to prioritize where things are when it comes to finances, when it comes to cost of capital, when it comes to you know, protecting companies and providing buffers, if you will, and providing safety nets and allowing companies to grow, you know, allowing companies to prosper and individuals to prosper as well. So I think this will hopefully be the time that's just coming up now with the new administration, and it's going to involve a lot of interesting conversations.
I'll bet you, well, I won't say two adult beverages at Ceres, that's too much. I'll bet you one adult beverage at Ceres, there will be no new idea. A real new idea. Dan, there are no new ideas.
I'll come up with one.
Well, it's like trying to invent a new fetish. You can't think of one somebody hasn't done before. I mean, I can't think of anybody in either the old administration or the new administration to come up with a new idea. A new way to steal money, an old way, an old-fashioned way or something. Maybe that.
might just be packaged a different way. Right, exactly.
If the numbers, the Treasury numbers, keep coming out, like, you know, Carl will probably talk more about it on Friday. The first, well, we've got October and November in the books, right? Both months are horrible in terms of governmental spending versus what they're taking in. I'm stunned that the receipts are as low as they are, aren't you?
Yeah. Yes.
What is? I mean, if everything's growing, like everybody says, I'll kick this up here. If everything's growing as fast as everybody says it is, how the hell in God's name are the receipts down? That should be the one spot that's up, right?
It should be. It should be. Yeah.
And I don't know what I mean. What are we? If this doesn't happen, if it doesn't keep coming up like this. What are we doing? I'll get the current issue up here, which we'll have October, November. And I don't think that our receipts, last year they were up a little bit. The year before they were down. How can you have this economy that's supposed to be spectacular? How can receipts be down? It's the one thing you can't cheat at is your W-2, for God's sake, right? Or your withholding. I'm going to say this year, the receipts in October... When you come to this, I'm looking at the monthly Treasury statement. Right, receipts in October last year were $403 billion. This year they were $326, so they're down. Last year, November, was $274. This year was $301, so that's up. So that's $26 up and $75 down. So the receipts in the first 2 months of the year are $50 billion less than last year. How in God's name can that be if the economy is stronger?
Yeah,
I mean it.
Theory, all, it doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make any sense, does it? I mean, these numbers, like I mentioned with Kenny earlier, and we talked about it last week. How do you have 1.8 million people on the establishment survey hired, and 700,000 people working less in the household survey over a period of a year? Something is fishy someplace. Is that how's that for an economic term?
Yeah.
Remember in Star Trek when Scotty told Spock, the ship just doesn't feel right, and Spock says, "There's no logic there, Mr. Scott." He goes, "I don't know, it just doesn't feel right."
Yeah,
and this something feels wrong here to me. What do you think?
Right.
I mean, I we've got our people actually in the last week or so, we've done some of our best work, Dan, and I'm proud to say that. I mean, you can't put numbers on it because everybody's different, but we had been letting our puts kind of drag because all we've done is gone up, right? And all of a sudden, the last week or two with the Fed meeting, I said, you know, My brother says, you know, maybe we should move these up a little bit. And I go, yeah, which ones do you have? And we were dragging. And we brought everything up pretty close. And that one huge down day we had, we were up to, you know, for most everybody, you know, 45, 50 delta puts, not 25. So on the down day, we, you know, did okay on those. I mean, we were still down because we weren't 100 delta. And then that night, we rolled them back the other way, and it popped back up. So we actually, in those, that two-day period, the two real nice rolls, because I mean, we did come right back. And I don't know, I'm not so sure that day wasn't a little bit of an example of something where it could happen. Because it happened so fast, Dan. Weren't you a little surprised how fast we went down?
I was surprised how fast it went down. I wasn't totally surprised that it did come back somewhat. You know, it didn't come back as quickly as it went down, but I think I was, yeah. And again, there's a certain point where investors are going to say, okay, this is manageable, and then there's a point where investors are really going to get scared. Like, it's going to get past their level of comfort, and we're not there yet, which is what this this example, if you will, told us, that we're not there yet. So I just see this playing itself out till the end of the year without a whole lot of additional anxiety or fear. It's just, I think everything that's built in is continue to be built in, and the uncertainty is still there. And you know, let's just, you know, I don't know whether we say that Powell gets a soft landing, but at least I'd say that the year ends pretty good.
Well, it made me a little afraid. We got a dasher, maybe a little afraid, because on the way up, you know, you and I talk periodically about the fact that when it goes up, it doesn't seem to be a seller any place.
That's true.
Is that just the fabric of the market? But I thought that maybe if it went the other way, that would be the same kind of problem. I watched a couple of those stocks last Wednesday. Then Tesla went down $46 without a bid. I mean, there was nobody in the way. That thing could have kept going another 40.
That's
scary.
That's the point that we need to watch for, is when there isn't a bid. That's what we need to watch for, when there isn't that money stepping in at some point. But I do think there's a fair amount of that money on the sidelines still, and it's stepping in at different points. It's waiting for it to hit a certain level, and you still are getting 4.25% on cash. So that's why there's still a fair amount of money sitting in cash, just waiting for some of these opportunities.
Well, the next morning when we were down again, and people had a chance to gather themselves and look at the prices and say, yeah, I'd like to buy these stocks at these levels, then we started to come back. But that day, it's not like there's, you know, 3 million shares of Tesla bid for at 400 and it's sitting there just waiting for somebody to get there. I don't think there is.
Right, I agree.
So, Dan, you're staying in Florida, right, for Christmas? Are you having a...
Yes, and then heading out to tomorrow morning, yeah.
Okay, you got when you're... So what, you're mooching off somebody else, or you guys having Christmas?
We're having Christmas.
You guys are supposed to be pretty good weather, Kenny was saying. So
decent weather, and I hear all the there's talk of some of the carolers coming from Mar-a-Lago and
oh god. Well, Dan, you have a Merry Christmas. It's been a fun year. I thank you. I'll thank you again next week for the new year. But we'll see you next week on your regular day, Thursday, correct?
Yes.
All right, Thursday, buddy. Yeah. SP Futures up 11, NASDAQ Futures up 82. Merry Christmas, everybody. Back on Thursday, Stocks and Jocks.
That's all, folks.